This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody, and once more, welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. As Blackburn Rovers' Adam Armstrong continues his great start to the season. Only his own team and Reading have scored more Sky Bet Championship goals than him. As in Sky Bet League One, Oxford United secure an impressive win at Accrington Stanley despite arriving in a fleet of cars and taxis after an alcohol-based coronavirus spray got in the breathalyzer system of their team bus and prevented it from starting. And as in Sky Bet League Two, rather like large swathes of the country, sadly two of the 12 games succumbed to the pandemic. It's already shaping up to be a season like no other, and we'll reflect on it on the official EFL podcast. Well, what a difference a couple of months makes. On the 14th of July this year, Hull City's 8-0 defeat at Wigan Athletic en route to relegation from the Sky Bet Championship equaled their 109-year-old club record loss. But on the 26th of September, their win at Northampton Town made it their best start since the 1948-49 season when they went on to win their first nine league matches and ultimately the old Division 3 North. Grant McCann's team are one of three Sky Bet League One teams, along with Ipswich Town and Lincoln City, with 100% records. And I knew, Grant, I was taking a chance by mentioning that in the introduction to you, because I'm guessing that result I've just referred to took a heck of a lot to get out of your system.
Look, we're trying to forget about what happened last season. I know it's hard, but we had some dark days, obviously, after January, and that was one of them, like you've quite rightly pointed out. And one of the lowest nights of my whole career, probably the lowest. But what we've tried to do is change the culture, change the mindset. A lot of work's gone on into that in the training grounds, with the recruitment, with the type of people, type of player, and more their personality than anything, really, that we've tried to bring into the football club. And just trying to create that winning feeling on an everyday level on the training ground that can hopefully help us at the weekends. And at this present time, it is. But you're right, yeah, I mean, we did have some dark days last season, but we're all focused on the job at hand at the minute. And, you know, what they say, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. That's the mindset that we've got at this present time.
How quickly a turnaround can be affected if you do some of the things you've just talked about, which is to get to the heart of it and set the club on a different path.
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously appreciative of the owners and giving me the opportunity to try and turn this around. You know, we all take responsibility for what happened last year. There's no finger pointing at anyone. We all simply were not good enough in what happened, but we've got an opportunity now to right the wrongs, really. And this group, we've got a real determination to try and make that happen. My coaching staff also, and everybody that works at this training ground, we've got a sheer focus of trying to get this club back to the Championship. It's not going to be easy, Clem. You know, I know League One very, very well. It's a very tough division. Every game is different in terms of the way teams set themselves up and how you have to approach games. And like you say, we've started it quite well, but it's only a start and long may it continue.
So what did you do? The final whistle goes on the last game of last season. I mean, do you sit quietly for a day, 2 days, a week with a bit of paper and sketch out what you want, or have discussions already started to take place? I mean, what do you do to reinvent the culture of a club that, let's be honest, hadn't had a great end to last season? What exactly did you do, Grant?
It happened straight after the final whistle. I remember walking down a tunnel and seeing Ehab, the vice chairman, and he just put his arms around me and said, look, let's bounce back. And that just gave me a real determination to thank him, really, and hopefully, like I said to you, I know it's not going to be easy, but I'm hoping this group of players with the standard of players and the calibre of players and characters we have in this club, that we can do that this year, and we can get them back. You know, also the fans, we've gone through a lot this past season. You know, for us to be in the playoffs on New Year's Day, well, just outside in goal difference, and to finish the way we did, a lot of things happened. We lost a couple of our better players. But after, you know, now we're feeling in a confident place. We're feeling in a good place. and we just want to have a good season and see if we can get ourselves back into the Championship.
I mean, you did have quite a belly load of things to deal with. You just referred to Jared Bowen leaving, who obviously got, I think it was 16, 15 in the league last season. Obviously, Cameron Grzycki left. You also had other factors like the whole Angus McDonald situation, you know, his bowel cancer diagnosis. And you kind of, to be the custodian of the club through lots of different circumstances like this is one heck of a challenge for a young manager, Grant.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of challenges last year. There really was, and probably some I wouldn't want to speak about. But I think the biggest challenge was losing the two boys at that time and the effect it had on the group that we probably didn't realise what it was going to have. And that coincided with having, I think, 10 or 11 injuries at the same time. You know, some big players. I don't think we had a fit back four at one stage. We had some younger players that stepped in, first time playing in the Championship. And it just got to a stage where our captain and our vice-captain didn't want to play. My question to them was, would you have played if it had been April in any normal season? They said yes, and I didn't see the reason why they wouldn't do it after lockdown. So that was a kick in the teeth for us all, really, as well. But yeah, I mean, there was a lot of challenges last year. You know, what was good after that last game against Cardiff, like you referred to, was we had a chance to just rip it up and start again. And that's what we've done. We've kept the players that we wanted to keep. We've recruited very well in the summer. And we've got a squad of players now who know what it takes to get promoted and want to win. And I think that's the change of culture that we're seeing at this present time.
I mean, there's a huge debate going on about the future of the game and this whole COVID environment we're in. But, you know, looking back in your playing career and the way when things hadn't quite worked out at West Ham, you were able to pick up the pieces at Cheltenham and then move round through the Barnsleys and Thorpes and then eventually to Peterborough. I guess you're a shining example of just how important, Grant, the pyramid is to what's going on that little bit further up.
Yeah, all through my career I've always had setbacks and I've always had people telling me I'm not good enough or you can't do this, which I always do not accept, and I always like to try and prove people wrong. So, you know, I've been used to this. I think I've gone through quite a lot in my young age as a manager, as I would say. I don't feel young, but I am young in terms of as a manager. But I think I've gone through a lot. You know, the time I had at Peterborough, the learning curve I had there with Dara McAntony and Barry Fry, to lose my job there when we were 6 points off the playoffs with a couple of games in hand, to searching for a new job and getting in at Doncaster, losing in the playoffs like we did at Charlton, was a kick in the teeth. And then last season, you know, I think I've gone through quite a lot that some managers probably wouldn't go through in 15 years, and I've gone through it probably in 3 or 4. So these are all things that I hope that'll make me better in the future, and I'll learn from it, and I'll improve as a person, as a coach, as a manager.
So who manages the manager? Who looks after you? Who were your confidants that kept you going through some of those dark moments or those roadblocks that you encountered?
Yeah, I'm the worst loser in the world, and I try not to show it, of course, but when I get home, obviously my wife and my kids probably take the brunt end of it. But they're the ones that drive me. My family, my mum and dad, they've supported me through thick and thin since I moved over here at 16 years of age from West Ham. My younger brother, you know, they're the ones that support me and keep me on the right track. And, you know, I have to special mention to my assistant manager as well, Cliff Byrne, who has been very close to me now for the last 2.5 years from Doncaster to Hull. Those inner circle that I've got are the ones that try and keep me on my toes and keep me driving me every single day. But ultimately, it comes from within to get up and hopefully try and make an impact on people.
I mean, you've got a unique playoff perspective as a player, because when I sort of remember back, you know, you've won promotion through the playoffs to 3 different clubs, Cheltenham, Scunthorpe, Peterborough, but 3 different grounds as well. So do you get a feeling at the start of a season when it is going to be your campaign, when there's something in the water and you're going to be a contender that might last throughout the whole season?
Yeah, you do. I think all the times that I've been promoted, it all came with the unity and the togetherness of the group. And that's something I've tried to create here and at Doncaster in the season in League One as well. There's that unity, that togetherness, that we're all in it together. It's all, you know, if you walked around our training ground now, you'll see a lot of signs saying surrender the me for the we. And it's a saying that I really like. You know, it's no one's bigger than anybody else at this football club. We're here together and we all want to be successful and we all want to try and have a promotion push. But yeah, you do get a little feeling. I've got a good feeling at this present time. Maybe if you come back to me in 7 or 8 weeks' time, we've lost one or two games in a row, I might say something different. But at this present time, I've got a good feeling. And the group is feeling strong and feeling robust. And we just can't wait for the games to come now.
I mean, is there a sense of unity sort of with the wider club as well? Because I think probably the biggest compliment I could pay to you and your predecessor, Nigel Adkins, was the kind of off-the-field swirl of headlines seems to have... It's dissipated a wee bit, which is kind of tribute to the way that you've been the figurehead for the whole club.
Yeah, I mean, there's always a lot of talk regarding things going around the club or fans being unhappy with this, but all I can do is focus on the football, really, and making sure that we have got a team that can go out and perform for the fans. That's basically all I can do. You know, I was asked a question after the Cardiff game, how can the fans believe you? I said the only way they can start believing me is by winning. That's ultimately the only way the fans will believe you. We've started it okay this League One season, and we want to make sure we keep on the same path that we're on.
I mean, I'm sure somebody has mentioned this to you, but do you want me to share this stat with you again? I gave you right at the start. 1948-49, won the first nine. No pressure there then, eh, mate?
No, that would be lovely. I tell you, that would be nice. But one game at a time, Mark, I'm sure you've heard that statement a few times, but one game at a time. We've got another tough game coming up against Plymouth on Saturday. And I mean, I think our start has been quite tough as well, you know. Gillingham away, first game, is a team who are very strong at home. And you think you've seen, since we beat them, they've gone and beat Wigan and Blackpool. And then to have the three promoted teams who have got that winning feeling, that winning mentality, it's tough. You know, Crewe gave us a really good game at the KCOM and Northampton gave us a good game at Sixfields. And now we've got Plymouth coming up on Saturday again, another team who are used to winning. So these are all big tests for us to try and overcome.
Well, listen, congratulations once again on your start. We wish you luck for the rest of the season.
Thank you very much.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
The refreshingly frank Hull City manager, Grant McCann. So, have you ever wondered what it's like to be a teenage academy player trying to make your way to a lower league club when suddenly a Premier League giant come calling? Well, that's been the story of a promising 17-year-old Burton Albion goalkeeper. Before we meet him, we can talk about him to his academy manager, Dan Robinson. Does this happen a lot then, Dan?
Well, I tell you what, Clemmy, it's not, from our perspective, it's an unbelievable step in the right direction, I guess, with us getting players through to the first team in the last few years. And with Teddy progressing and getting an opportunity at Chelsea, it all seems a little bit pinch me at the moment for us at Burton Albion. But no, it doesn't happen very often. And when it does, it's magnificent. But it's a funny old time.
I mean, I have an awareness of scouts, obviously, at senior matches, at EFL matches. But is there a huge prevalence at the sort of academy matches as well? Is there a constant demand for scouts from clubs all over to be allowed in the grounds?
Yeah, there is. Through all our age groups, from under nines through to the under 18s, we get regular scouts from the surrounding big Midlands clubs in general. So your Nottingham Forest, your Derbys, your Leicesters, Villas and Wolves and the likes, they tend to be at most our games. And then when a young player is doing particularly well and it seems to be drawing the attention of a few of those clubs, and that some of the bigger boys tend to come along as well. So we had that with Teddy. We've had it with a few of the boys over the last few years. It's just exciting. I mean, it's part of the process. When they come in, they come and they have to register. So we know they're there. There's none of the untoward, tapping on shoulders of players in car parks. It's very, very. It's all done properly. But it's exciting for us when we're attracting that attention.
So, Teddy Sharman-Lowe. Tell me all you know. I'm looking forward to meeting him and speaking to him, but tell me all you know. When you first became aware of him, how long you've been working with him, what his strengths are, and he is listening on the line, so we better not overdo it, because we want him to keep being ambitious and not think he's the finished product yet.
Well, first of all, Teddy comes from a lovely family. They're based out of Leicester. We came across through our former head of goalkeeping, Paul Reynolds. He came across Teddy having been let go by Leicester City at end of under 14s, I think it was. And Teddy was, I would say, and I'm sure he'll be happy with me saying this, he was about 5'6", very, very slight for a goalkeeper. And we looked at him and we thought, crikey, we hope he grows. But ultimately, when he came in, we saw a real potential in his ability, really great character, as I say, from a smashing family. And we thought, well, we don't select on physicality, so we'll give the lad a chance. And well, we're so chuffed we did, because he progressed very quickly. He had a really good year with us in the schoolboy program. He got his scholarship, and he had one first year as a scholar with us. Went from a pre-season trip in Holland. I think he was about 6'2" at this point. So he'd shot up in 18 months. We went to Holland for pre-season, not too far away from this time last year. And since then, he's made his England debut, and he's signed for one of the biggest clubs in the world. So it's all been a bit of a whirlwind for him. It's a real nice story of a boy who got told he wasn't quite at the level for a top club, came to us. We worked with him, and he worked ever so hard himself, done fantastically well, and now look at him, he's doing ever so well at another level, and he's back with us on loan, so he's on the bench for us regularly, which is great to see him around the place still, even though I know he's down in at Chelsea at the moment, where he's been training this week.
Well, listen, he is earwigging on the conversation, so I want to thank you for setting the whole story up beautifully, and I'm going to say goodbye to you, and I'm going to have a chat to Teddy himself.
Thanks, Glenn.
Teddy, very nice to meet you. Can you put into words last month has been like, please?
It's been very surreal. It's all happened like so quick as well. After I signed, I went straight back to Burton, so I didn't meet anyone. So it didn't really kick in for about 3 weeks, and now I'm down here. It's amazing.
How did you find out about Chelsea's interest? What was the sort of sequence of events, and where were you when you found out?
To be honest, I wasn't really too involved with it all. I found out that there was a few clubs interested, and then the only one that really gone forward with it was Chelsea. And then obviously the clubs agreed terms, and I got a call when I was at my nana's house, and it was amazing. Everyone was really supportive.
Supportive? I would imagine they were all jumping up and down, weren't they, Teddy?
Yeah. It was amazing. Like everyone, from my nana to my auntie was there. My parents, my brother, supportive, jumping up and down, mixed emotions, to be fair.
I can't imagine how nervous you were that first day when you had to turn up at Chelsea's academy and kind of start all over again.
Yeah, it was a hard first day, but the amount of support and help to make me feel welcome was amazing. From the boys that I've known through the England setup, but also ones I've never met before, all the academy staff, 23 staff and players, they just made me feel welcome straight away.
Have you always been a goalkeeper?
No, so I used to play centre mid when I was Sunday League, and then it was literally one training session and I switched to a goalkeeper, and I told my dad and he called me crazy. But ever since then, I've just progressed and now I am where I am.
Wow. Heroes? Who are your goalkeeping heroes?
I would say when I was really young, watching Van der Sar, he was always one I looked up to. And I'd say now would probably be Ter Stegen for Barcelona. Like similar build, very good with his feet. He's like my ideal goalkeeper.
That kind of inspiration. You're looking all over the world. I get you. Listen, you heard Dan paying a glowing tribute to you. I'm sure you'd like to pay one in reverse, the job that Bert and Albion have done in your development.
Yeah, it's been amazing, really, since they picked me up at Leicester when I was what was an all-time low for me. Not in the best of headspace, but then to find an amazing club like Burton with the most helpful, supportive staff, I can only show them gratitude. From when I first joined to even when I was trying to get my scholarship, they've just pushed me and pushed me. And now I've moved on, but they've helped me so much and I owe pretty much everything to them.
So this season involves a sort of a joint week, does it? You're up at Burton for the back end of the week, training with first team squad. You're down at Chelsea for the early part of the week?
Yeah, so Burton and Chelsea have to make a monthly schedule. Both agreeing are based on my recovery. So I'm not travelling on my recovery days. I'm getting a good day. But it's also to do with Burton's Tuesday games. So if they don't have a Tuesday game, I can come up for 3 or 4 days, integrate into the Chelsea team and get to know everyone. But if they do have a Tuesday game, obviously that's my lone priority. So I've got to train, be ready for the game, be ready for anything, really.
And we always hear about sort of the bigger clubs' loan managers and things. Is there constant contact with Chelsea now as your kind of parent club? Are they on the phone to you daily, every other day? What's the sort of communication?
Well, obviously, now I'm down here for a bit. We talk every day. The loan management, loan coaches talk with Burton coaches every day. Just always trying to help me, creating a plan that's going to suit me good, going to develop me well. But yeah, they're always in contact, making sure everything's right for me.
Teddy, we've mentioned the real low point in your life. What would your message be to players who find themselves in the situation you did at Leicester, bearing in mind where you now are in your life? What sort of message would you pass out to them?
Well, you'd hear it a lot, but it's the old thing of just keep going, keep pushing, never give up. Even when I left Leicester, got released, I came to Burton, still wasn't in the best headspace. And you've just got to push through it. You've got to never have disbelief in yourself, because once that doubt creeps in your mind, it ruins you. It really does. And even when I was a bit older, 16, 17, trying to get my scholarship at Burton, it was never certain. I was never that good where I knew something was going to happen. So you've just got to keep pushing through, keep hoping for the best, and obviously making stuff happen. Never wish for anything.
Well, listen, long way to go, but it goes without saying, we shall watch your progress. Enjoy every second.
Thank you, Clem. Thank you very much.
You know what, Dan? I've been around the EFL for a long time, but I still love stories like this. I mean, it's what a fantastic opportunity and what a contrast to the sort of low point in his life.
Oh, it really is. And unfortunately, in this crazy world of football that we're in, this entertainment industry, what people don't see is the stuff behind the scenes with young lads progressing or not progressing, and how tough it can be on them mentally with their families. And Teddy referenced the amount of travel that his mum and dad have, and the miles they've put into to get him to football and give him the chance to be this at this level that he's at. And I think with this particular situation with Ted, it really does give boys and girls in the women's game that opportunity to go, look, you know, you might get setbacks, you will do at some point. How you channel yourself and how you focus after that can really give you, if you really want it, the opportunity. And the thing that really resonated for me is how the support that he gets around him from not just from us as a club, but also from his family, he's played such a big part. So it's a brilliant story. We're really proud of him. We're really chuffed he's doing well down there. And he's got a long way to go, but I tell you what, keep an eye out for him. He's going to be a star one day, no doubt.
Fantastic. Great to talk to Teddy Sharman-Lowe, and great to talk to you, Dan Robinson.
Thank you very much, Clem. Cheers.
This is the official EFL podcast.
So every week on the official EFL podcast, we conclude by wrapping up some of the week's key talking points, and indeed look ahead to the weekend's most notable up-and-coming fixtures in the company of a prominent EFL aficionado. And they don't come much greater an EFL aficionado than my old mate and colleague from BBC and Sky Sports, Caroline Barker.
I wondered how you're going to skew that then. And you're very lucky that I'll talk to you at all, because currently there are fumes and all sorts coming out of every orifice over fans not being allowed into the FA Cup this weekend. But you don't want to talk about that, do you?
Well, but actually, because of your links to non-league football and the fact you're a director at Chelmsford Town, etc.
City.
And because of your links to Chelmsford City, I do want to talk to you about the whole idea of football clubs being rooted in their communities, because right. this is being used as one of the sort of key planks for the reason that football much further down should get bailouts from either leagues above or from government and things. Do you want to just give me a perspective on that and what it means from your point of view?
When I was just a few days old, my mum was still very ill, so I was strapped to the back of the stands at New Rittle Street, which is right by Essex Cricket Ground here in Chelmsford, right in the centre of the town that's now become a city. And I was dragged along to the football because I didn't know any better at that stage. And then it seeped through me, coursed through me. It's where I had my first loves, not just the love of those that were on the football pitch, where I found out about alcohol, not drinking it, but watching my brothers drink it, where I had late nights over the bridge, and where I think it was Gravesend and Northfleet, as they were called then, soon to become Ebbsfleet soon after, when they booed at us and then laughed at us because they'd heard the bridge was closed on the way back and we'd have to drive all the way around London to get back home. All my formative years were spent at that football club. And that's me as just your average fan, forgetting the work that they then do with the academies in the local area, the local schools, the work they do on diversity, the work they do on walking football, on all levels of the game. They are rooted at the centre of it. That aside, you can go and play chess, you could play darts, you could go along there on a Tuesday night and just meet your mate and have nothing to do with the football that was going on the park behind you. They are the centre of communities. They are the heartbeat of communities. Not the only thing, of course, but for many, many thousands of people across this country, they are part and rooted to their community.
Mm. I mean, and magnified, I guess, the further up football's food chain, for want of a better expression, that you go with more and more programmes, et cetera, et cetera. Let's have a little look back at what happened last weekend. And my eyes are drawn to Blackburn's astonishing 4-0 win at Derby County, when I think I'm right in saying, did I see a statistic that three of Blackburn's goals were actually scored in 238 seconds?
I know you love your reading around, and I love how you always mention sort of podcasts and newspapers. There was a great bit, I don't know if you've seen, on Lancashire Live, where they were comparing Blackburn to Liverpool, which is brilliant. But it was essentially just the journalist saying, when they used to go to press conferences, Tony Mowbray would talk about Liverpool all the time. And now when he's tried to sort of shoehorn this into the piece, and it makes absolute sense because he talks about their fullbacks overlapping, about the pace, about Adam Armstrong being the focal point, and the stats then which he uses to break it up. He talks about Rovers going from 71% possession against Wickham to just 37% against Derby, but then still having the chances. So this flexibility that he's got with the team, the way he's got them playing, is not only great to watch at the moment, but it's getting them their results. And then if you flip side that to Derby, Philip Cocu, and we know there were questions maybe towards the end of last season, but I kind of think everyone was all right with 10th. But how were they going to push on this season? What were they going to show them this season? And I think that they want a striker. He said they've got three or four targets they want to bring in. But the worrying thing is how he called out the attitude, the passion, the desire of his team. And that's the real worry for me is how do you find that? How do you switch that on? How do you make that happen? And they're in all sorts of bother at the moment.
It's strange, isn't it? Because obviously we've got Forest as well, not picking up a single point so far. But when I see a 4-0 at home, I don't wish this on any manager, but I start to gulp any more than three goals conceded at home, and I take a deep breath and don't sort of go and read the wires on a Monday morning just in case somebody's departing. In stark contrast, what a great start to his management career to Dean Holden at Bristol City, 2-0 winners over Sheffield Wednesday. And I'm talking to him privately, although I'm not about to reveal anything that I shouldn't.
Go on.
But before the season started, he said he was actually quite relieved that the club did go through a rounded process of speaking to some of the names that they did before deciding that he was the one. It actually gave him a vote of confidence. Because we had a similar situation last year, actually, when Jonathan Woodgate got the Middlesbrough job, where he was heavily linked, one of the favourites, seemed to be the guy getting it. And then we went round and round and round for 3 or 4 weeks before coming back to the natural conclusion. Anyway, long story short, good start. You'd take that, wouldn't you, at the start of the season?
I think you would, particularly given the unfair comments about when he got the job as to what direction they were going. And what he has done, not least with, again, a team that looks great to watch, fantastic on the eye. But then with the fans, we spoke a little bit on the Sky Football show this week about that he went down to the Three Lions pub with his dad and with his brother. And that's kind of what you want to see from a manager. Or an acceptable social distance, of course. Everything was safe. But it's that actually he's talking to the fans and he's getting that reaction from the players. But there's also someone made a great point about the fact that they've done well on who they've brought in. And Brian Tinian, who I think you spoke to a number of times, like a huge number of appearances for Bristol City, something like over 550 appearances for him. And the fans have spoken about the impact that he's had. He's their player loan manager. And just really the quality of players that they've got, the way they're all playing, and you look at them and you just think they're going to carry on flying.
And, you know, you're talking about sort of going off into the pub and the being safe and all the rest of it. If there's one story so far this season that sort of encapsulates the situation we find ourselves in, it's an extraordinary win from Oxford at Accrington, where I am going to pay tribute to the 4-1 victory, but the whole circumstances before. I mean, you could not script it, could you? Alcohol-based antivirus spray gets in the breathalyzer system of the team bus and prevents it from starting for 6 hours. I mean, it just kind of underwrites what we're all going through at the moment and the complete and total no rules culture that we seem to have of you just don't know what is going to happen when you take your next breath and see what's around the corner.
Jeff Stelling summed it up perfectly when he heard and told us the story on Sky and just said, yeah, it's 2020. It's all about 2020. Of course, this is what's going to happen. But the coming out of that then is Carl Robinson, what he managed to get from the side, James Henry's first goal for Oxford this season, just picking up that win too. Sometimes you need something a bit different, and we'll see it maybe, and we have seen it with some of these managers coming in, trying to kickstart a result however they can, making 7 changes, 6 changes, throwing everything up in the air. Maybe it's just down to the fact that you all need to get off the coach, get in your own cars and make your way to the ground, or walk to the ground, or whatever it might be that we've seen happen before, just to get something a bit different and gets it starting as it has happened for Oxford.
I don't want to pick on anybody, but if I look in League Two, Bolton are at the lowest point in the club's history, beaten 2-0 at home. I mean, I realise when you bring in sort of a team and a half of new players, there is a bedding in process. But when you're a young manager, albeit one that's got Barrow promoted and Ian Everett, and then you switch clubs, you don't want to start like this, do you? You need a few points on the board just to sort of keep the locals at bay.
I know we're going to go into the fixtures this weekend in a moment, but Bolton going to Harrogate is one of the key fixtures across the Football League this weekend. Ian Everett, and there's a manager trying to change stuff. He'd been pretty constant with his system. It was this 3-4-1-2 system that he'd been playing through the summer, or what we had of it. And then he's moved to a back four. And again, just trying to change things up. He's only had 5 players that have played the 90 minutes in each of those first 3 league games. So something needs to settle for him. Maybe it's the other side of that coin. He needs to settle something. He kind of talks about they need that confidence. It needs going off a backside, anything to happen to get that first goal, that first point, and to start pushing them on. But if you're going to make a big change and you're going to make all those changes, you have to allow managers time to settle. And that's what he needs.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure they will give him that time. It's just you kind of feel for him that you know, that kind of start comes up in a season that most people would have seen as the one where they're going to romp the league and start the complete and total turnaround. And we have to discuss the two games that didn't take place. I mean, Grimsby's match at Cheltenham called off because of positive COVID tests in the Grimsby camp, and obviously Leighton Orient's trip to Walsall as well. And if you're a lower league player, I guess you are going to have to fill your car up with fuel. You are going to have to nip in the local supermarket and, you know, use the keypad to pay for your groceries. You are going to have to pick your kids up from school. You are going to be in and about the community, and you are susceptible to catching it, just like the whole of the world is susceptible to catching it.
And there's the point, isn't it, Mark? We are all in that same predicament, and we've all got jobs to go to, those of us that are fortunate enough to still be in employment, and we will be having to disinfect our hands and wash our hands and go through all of that rigmarole. And it's just actually about mitigating that, having that safety factor within it, doing everything to your best possible ability. And I don't think necessarily that they've been given an opportunity at the moment. And by that I mean they pay their subs into the PFA. Likewise, the LMA. If there was ever a situation that both these organisations need to use whatever reserves of money they've got, whatever pots of money they've got, I'm not saying they've got loads, but whatever money they've got to back their members, then it's now. And if the PFA can start paying for players to have the regular tests, if the managers can, and again, it comes back to how do we want this season to look, and what's the worst possible case scenario, and what can we do to mitigate that? And if it is that we've got to get the money from somewhere, and if it is going to come from the PFA or the LMA, just to make sure that these games go on in a safe environment, then we've got to look at that first.
Shall we switch to this coming weekend? Have you got the fixtures in front of you there? Do you want to pick one or two out that caught your eye, or do you want me to stimulate the conversation?
See, there's a loaded question. Which games do you want me to talk about? Can I mention Luton? Can I mention Luton Wickham? Luton have had a solid start, but they didn't get a shot on target against Watford. Nathan Jones was critical again about the attitude of his players in that game. So I'd love to see what a Nathan Jones type rocket looks like as they go into this game this weekend, which will be no good for Wickham. Wickham need to get a point from somewhere. And I don't know if you've seen the InfoGoals model. They've started this fairness rating for whether a result was fair or not. And they had, oh, it was brilliant. They had the Watford-Luton game, whether it was a fair result, 85% fairness. And this is based on shots and XGs that I know you love, XGs. So that was 85%. The Wickham-Swansea, so Swansea beating Wickham 2-0, was 99.8% fair as a result. So it tells you that no one really was undone in fairness types in terms of the two games that they've both played this weekend. So that's it's a vital, huge game, the Luton-Wickham game.
Yeah, and listen, Gareth Ainsworth has been very clear that he wanted to be loyal to the players that had brought him this far. He didn't want to start bringing in players that were on a lot more money and disturbing team spirit.
No one knows what this season's going to do. It's still going to be odd. And if Wickham can maybe capture some of that cup spirit and all the cliches that were levelled at them last season in their success, and maybe they're doing that thing we said, sustainable. They're looking at it, and why spend beyond your means? And so you have to say that's sensible. They will give clubs problems this season, and it's just whether they can turn those problems into wins, which at the moment is escaping them. But a big, big game for them. It's just unfortunate they're coming up against their Luton team, who I think will be quite resolute this weekend.
Norwich Derby early kickoff on Saturday. We've got Borough against Barnsley. Forest at home to Bristol City.
Reading Watford, can we go there?
The Serbians.
So for Reading and for Watford, and that's what makes this game so intriguing this weekend. You've got two managers from very different backgrounds that are both getting something out of their respective clubs at the moment. And across the Championship, you're seeing such different ways of working in coaching, in management, that just proves again what a brilliant league it is to be part of.
We should mention in League One that Lincoln, along with Hull on 100% record away at Blackpool, and Ipswich are at MK Dons. Ipswich starting in a fine style again, unbeaten in their first 11 last time around, but then contrasted that with their form towards the end of the season. Well, I think I'm right in saying, no, the stat has escaped me momentarily, but they had such a contrasting season between the front and back ends, Ipswich last time around.
So he got Ipswich testing their record up against one of five teams without a win at the moment in Milton Keynes. The side story to this, which some of the local papers have picked up on, is celebrations from the Ipswich players. Do you remember last season? They stood in a line together, and this was all about Paul Lambert's. We're all in this together, and there was all the players stood in a line. They've been doing these blocking out the noise celebrations, which I know a certain reporter's been sent on to try and find out what it all means. You know, is it a celebration gimmick? Is it about people have really not mentioned us or counted us out for this season? So have a little look at that if they score this weekend, if they do the one to the lips or the fingers in the ears when they score, if they score against MK Dons. Blocking out the noise and celebration. I love a good side issue. That will come this weekend. For Lincoln at Blackpool, Brennan Johnson, I love, who they've just got on loan from Nottingham Forest. I think that Michael Appleton's spoken about him being real quality. With that injury to Callum Morton out for a couple of months, again, real quality on the loan market from West Brom, how that would affect them. I love Lincoln. I love the Imps. I love the fans. I love what that ground is like. I love following them, and I want them to do brilliantly well, brilliantly well. For Blackpool, I think they need to be a bit scrappier. Great possession against Gillingham, but whether they could cope with that sort of direct style of Steve Evans's side. James Husband again this week talking about them not being naive. They need to not be naive, need to scrap. And we might see a bit of a scrappier game this weekend.
Charlton against Sunderland. Well, we've had that as the League One playoff final on a couple of occasions, haven't we, over the last 3 decades? Yes, I think I've got my chronology correct. And we're going to have that great win at Portsmouth last week at home to Doncaster. And then in League Two, well, Cambridge away at Exeter, Port Vale away at Morecambe. And you've already mentioned that Harrogate Bolton. And you are right about those clubs that sort of rise so beautifully from non-leagues. They have been one of the great joys. It's easy to concentrate on the big traditional clubs that are on hard times, but equally we should celebrate this new blood coming into the EFL. Bright, innovative people that just find a new way of doing things.
Weaver and Co at Harrogate, I want to see them do well, not least because of the graft that I know as a family they've put in. And yes, money, but graft too. 5 points from 3 games. I think they've shown that they can do the old grit your teeth, mix it, get on with it. And sixth at the moment, Harrogate, which is brilliant. I want to just focus on Mark Bonner, and you mentioned Cambridge United. I think what he's doing there is fantastic. Love the way he talks as well. I find him engaging as a manager to listen to. Big test for Oldham at Colchester for Harry Kuehl. He's spoken about they need to be up for the fight. They need to bring the fight too. So, gosh, we are 3 games in, just 2 games for some of these teams. And look already just how we're right back in it. And it's like it's the middle or the end of the season already, given these stories that are surrounding all of them.
Over the space of the time that we've been together, I've actually forgotten about this ghastly disease and just been engaged with the football. And I hope everybody listening has been as well. Great to talk to you.
My absolute pleasure. An honour to come on. Thank you for having me.
That's it for another week. A huge thanks to Caroline Barker, to Dan Robinson and Teddy Sharman-Lowe from Burton Albion, and to Grant McCann. If you enjoyed this week's episode, then feel free to give us a 5-star rating. Press the subscribe button and share on all your socials. If you want to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. We'll see you next week for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.